The Supreme Court ruled today that local communities cannot require missionaries or other advocates of a cause to register before they take their message door to door. The court's 8-1 vote came in a lawsuit brought by the Jehovah's Witnesses against an Ohio village. NPR legal affairs correspondent Nina Totenberg reports now on two Supreme Court rulings that came down today. First, the case of Watchtower Bible and Tract Society of New York, Inc. versus the village of Stratton, Ohio.
The village of Stratton is a small town with fewer than 300 residents, the majority of them elderly. It thought it had a problem with door-to-door salesmen, canvassers, and even missionaries. Indeed, at one point, the mayor had a confrontation with several Jehovah's Witness missionaries. The mayor has not contested the account given by the witness's lawyer, Paul Polidoro.
A group of three women were leaving Stratton, having returned to the village to speak with individuals who had previously expressed an interest in hearing their Bible-based message. The mayor physically confronted them and said, "Don't you understand? People move to Stratton because they know they don't have to be bothered by Jehovah's Witnesses. If you were men, I would have had you arrested."
Shortly after that incident, the Stratton Village Council adopted an ordinance aimed at anyone going door to door, whether they were Girl Scouts selling cookies, trick-or-treaters, siding salesmen, or Ku Klux Klansmen. All were required to register first with the village clerk. Once they'd registered, a permit was to be automatic with no discretion given to village officials, but registration was required. The Jehovah's Witnesses challenged the ordinance in court, claiming it violated their right to free speech. They lost in the lower courts, but today the Supreme Court, by an 8-1 vote, upheld the right of religious proselytizers, political activists, and other advocates of a cause to go door-to-door seeking support without having to register first. Writing for the court majority, Justice John Paul Stevens acknowledged that municipalities have legitimate interests in regulating some kinds of solicitation activity to protect residents from being victimized by con men, for example. And had this ordinance applied only to commercial activity or the solicitation of funds, he said, it might well have been permissible. But the mere breadth of the Stratton ordinance's reach makes it unconstitutional, he said, even if, as here, a permit is automatically granted, it still remains, he said, that requiring a permit to engage in religious and political speech is a dramatic departure from our national heritage. Why, this law is so broad, said Stevens, that a person who decided on a holiday weekend to hand out campaign literature in the neighborhood would be committing a misdemeanor because he wouldn't be able to get a permit. Or if he just decided spontaneously to ring a neighbor's doorbell to urge a vote against the mayor, he similarly would be violating the law. Moving on to another point, Justice Stevens said that a significant number of people prefer to be anonymous when going door-to-door, often because they fear economic retaliation for their activity or being socially ostracized, or some just don't want to seek permission to speak from a, quote, petty official. As to concerns about privacy, said the court, the village of Stratton allows any resident to post a no solicitation sign and have violators arrested. The Jehovah's Witnesses did not challenge that ordinance. Finally, as to the village's stated purpose of preventing crime, Stevens said, it seemed unlikely that the absence of a permit would prevent criminals from knocking on doors and engaging in conversation not covered by the ordinance, for example, asking to use the phone. Reaction to today's decision was predictable. Here's Paul Polidoro, the lawyer for the Jehovah's Witnesses.
When one reads Justice Stevens' opinion, one notes the discussion of cases that the Jehovah's Witnesses were involved in back in the 1940s. And the modern life was breathed back into those cases by this Watchtower decision. And we're very pleased.
It's unclear just how many of the nation's 36,000 municipalities have laws like the one struck down today, but a significant number do, as evidenced by the fact that 10 states filed a brief in the Supreme Court urging that the Stratton law be upheld. Laney Williams of the Municipal Lawyers Association said the saving grace may be that many local ordinances are more restricted than Stratton's.
There are many more local governments that have permitting processes only for commercial solicitation, and there are fewer that address political and religious and charitable canvassers.
The Stratton case also had worried campaign reformers, and today some campaign reform opponents claimed that the court's ruling provided a boost to arguments that campaign financial reporting requirements are unconstitutional. Herb Titus is a lawyer for one such group.
I believe that this case is the seedbed for just precisely that kind of claim.
But most election experts saw today's ruling instead as a boost for financial reporting requirements in campaigns, because the court's majority opinion specifically cited protection of election integrity as a compelling justification for citizens to be required to provide information. Dissenting from today's ruling was Chief Justice William Rehnquist, who said that in his view, the Stratton Ordinance was easily justified by the village's concern about crime. Rehnquist noted that the recent murder of a couple in Hanover, New Hampshire, was accomplished by two teenagers who told the couple they were conducting an environmental survey for school. Had there been an ordinance like Stratton's in place in Hanover, he said, vigilant neighbors might have seen the boys going door to door and reported them. The court addressed crime in a more direct way in another case today, a case testing whether police who board a bus to search passengers must tell the passengers that they have the right to refuse a search if they wish. The case began in 1999 when a bus headed from Detroit to Fort Lauderdale made a stop in Tallahassee. Three policemen boarded, asking passengers if they could search them and their baggage. They obtained consent and arrested two men who had drugs taped to their bodies. In court, the two men argued that without being advised they could refuse, the search had been coercive and involuntary. But today, the U.S. Supreme Court upheld the search by a 6-3 vote. Harvard Law professor Bill Stuntz, who often teaches police about the law of search and seizure, said the court's ruling does not change existing police practice. Nonetheless, he said,
the reason it's important is that the issue is important. This is how most police searches are conducted. Police ask for consent, suspects give it, the police search, and if they find something, they make an arrest. There are 15 million, plus or minus a little bit, arrests in the United States each year. A sizable fraction of them happen this way.
Stunt said that whether or not people are told they can refuse a search, they usually do not.
Many police officers have told me over the years, we should all be thankful that criminals are frequently dumb.
Indeed, in this case, if the two men who were arrested had refused to be searched, the police would have had to let them go. Nina Totenberg, NPR News, Washington.